Nah, man. I was just watching the replays of the draft, the lottery, man.
The lotto.
So they have this view of Victor, and they call off the Rockets pick, which is, I think, fourth, right? And he's like, and then smiles. Like, I don't know if he's like fucking around, like, damn it, or like, haha, didn't get me. I don't know. But it's something to look into there.
I know, dude. Who wants to go to the Rockets?
Well, I mean,
Listen, dude. The Rockets are not the worst situation ever, but there's this.
That's what I'm saying.
Here's the thing, though. What happens sometimes is, like, a team will have like a certain reliable ownership for like a really long time, and you'll get used to them being like a playoff team. Like, I think the Rockets had like a dozen years in a row in the playoffs, but then they go out and they get a new owner, right? And new owners have new ideas, and Tillman comes in and does his own thing. The Jazz, they had a ridiculously competitive young roster, new ownership, new situation. The Suns, new ownership. You think, like, hey, maybe they're going to keep Monty Williams coach of the year, finalist. He got to the finals, things like that. So all of a sudden, like, this top changes, and you still kind of think that, well, we're used to the brand being stable. And then all of a sudden, it's not. And we're like, what happened?
They want to make their own, they want to make their own stamp. I mean, it makes sense, because you don't want to go, like, for instance, if you're a GM and you take over another a team, right? Mm-hmm. And that team goes and wins a championship the first year. Is it your championship or is it the guy's prior? And that's the thing about it, is that,
well,
that's
a, similar, that's in college,
why,
right?
A lot of GMs or presidents come in and they make huge changes across the board.
In college, like, a coach will come in, replace another coach, make a Final Four run or win a championship, but not with the kids he recruited.
Sups Mitza.
Right. And then they want to, like, bring in their own players, bring in their own system, and then it doesn't work. And they're like, what happened? Well, like, maybe they can't recruit the top level. I think Tubby Smith did something like that. The coach for UConn, he won a championship, and then they fired him within a few years.
Oh, Ollie.
Yeah, Kevin Ollie.
Connecticut. So,
Kevin Ollie, yeah.
So Connecticut's the first year that Ollie took over as coach, he won a championship. But everybody, you know, took that championship and gave it to, what was his name? Legendary coach. For Connecticut for all those years. I can't remember his name.
Yeah, Calhoun.
Oh, well. Yeah, Calhoun. Yeah, and he got credited for partial of that, and he should have, because Calhoun's the one that recruited everybody. So for me, like, that's, again, it goes back to when an ownership takes over, it doesn't matter if it's Houston, it doesn't matter if it's the Suns. I mean, it doesn't matter if it's Golden State. They're all going to end up changing stuff. They just are. They want to have their own brand on it. They want to be able to say, I won these championships without the help of blank
previous administrations or whatever. So with that going on, like, these teams, like, right now it feels like they're at least finalist or bust, conference finals or bust. Like, teams are going game seven in the semifinals, and then if they don't win, these coaches are getting fired. So that's just the expectations and the pressure that comes with this part of the season.
It's also, you got to understand that these coaches that are getting fired are old school mentality coaches. They don't have the new school basketball, the new school NBA systems in place. Yeah, they'll be able to learn it, but these guys, it's not a surprise that these guys are going off and getting fired right now. It's just not, because they're going to have the hardest time adjusting to the way the NBA is going to be played and run in the future.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
so
There's a lot of truth to that, and there's a lot of turnover in this situation. It was something that the commissioner talked about, but really,
did you see that job piece that he did,
dude? That I watched that.
That
and
that rocked me, bro.
He was really. He seemed like genuinely hurt,
dude. He was. He even said that I'm hurt about it. Like, you could tell the pain was like raw because he trusted him.
So
he was like, even like 8-game suspension seemed like a good like deal severe. For the understanding that he had of the situation.
You know what I think, bro? I think he's going to be suspended. Like, I've heard a lot of people say 40 games.
Yeah.
No, dude, he's going to be out for a whole year.
I know. It's an 82-game suspension.
What happens and if he gets 82-game suspension? Like, will he take it seriously after that?
He has to, because you take out, what, $35, $40 million out of a man's pocket?
You think he's going to, it'll derail his career, or you think he'll be able to get it back on track?
Listen, if you look back in the history of players that have gotten 80-game suspensions, right, they can come back, but they're never the same player. The only thing that, for me, looking at Morant, is if he gets an 80-game suspension, he's still under 25 years old. It could just be like he tore his ACL and out for a year. If he's okay, and this is the reality of the situation. Let's just be real. He has to be okay with living inside of Memphis's on-campus area. I'll be honest with you. Like, if I'm Memphis, the only way I'm letting him stay in Memphis is that if he stays in campus. Every NBA team has their, whether it's like right inside of the arena or outside of the arena, where they have rented hotels or apartments for the players. Okay, guys? So they have a place to stay before games to keep their minds clear. And that's what Morant is going to have to make the decision. If I can make this for an entire year staying at this facility and only thinking about hoops, then I can stay here and I can continue with my massive contract. But if I can't, then I think you got to move on.
So, look, if this was just like an incident where, like, it was two Instagram lives, like, it would still be like an appropriate reaction.
Dude, he came out with an apology.
Right. But
and he admitted to having the gun again.
But listen, dude, go back to what was going on before these Instagram lives showed up. Okay, there was the issue with
the laser
that
people thought was a weapon, and now we think it is absolutely a weapon.
So he was pointing a weapon at an opposing team. Like, that's what we're we're extrapolating from the situation.
Do you remember his first year? Would have been his rookie season. He was walking down the street, and there was a videotape of him holding a handgun, a weapon.
I remember that.
There is enough incidents now with him with a weapon that it's truly concerning. And, you know, the commissioner has all this stuff on his desk. He's taking his time with the decision. He's not making it rushed. Why? Because it's going to be an impactful suspension, something that's going to leave everybody just being like, yeah, no guns, no weapons, no nothing like that. And I get it. On your off time is your off time. But here's the reality, guys. You sign a contract, the NBA, that's saying that you will not have weapons. Like, if you have weapons, it'll be in the right place, shooting ranges and different things like that. But the whole point of it is not having weapons, right? And then you're continuing to do this and push the envelope. Not once, not twice, not three times, but enough times now where it's like, you know, I feel it for him. But now he's got to sit back and just enjoy the fact that he's going to probably have a year off of basketball. And that year off of basketball is going to be incredibly scrutinized. It's going to be incredibly looked under the microscope. If he makes one mistake, his NBA career is over, man. Because there's too many talented players out there that work too hard to allow a player like this that is going to bring the NBA name trash. Because we're not only talking about America here, right? We're talking about gun violence in America that's at an all-time high right now. And on top of that, not the world, the entire world, isn't okay with weapons. And here you got this young man who is out there showing a weapon. Like, you've got to stop this as an NBA, because you're a globalized community now. And this is not okay for a ton of countries. And it's not going to be responded well to. So for me, I'm looking at it saying the NBA has to stop this. The NBA has to say no more. And this is going to be, I mean, this is going to be the commissioner not only making the suspension and saying, furthermore, any other person that has guns that has shown like this in the wrong proper settings will be given a blank suspension automatically. And it's going to be harsh.
You know, it bums me out, because in a day that should be celebrated, right, we're talking about Ja Morant. But let's
we have to, though, because it affects how the Thunder season is going to go. Because if there's no Ja Morant, what is there, five teams in the West now, in the bottom of the West, that are going to be tanking and looking for draft picks? I mean, that just helps us out, because if we have five teams that are like, oh, well, we don't really care. Four teams, we don't really care.
Right.
And we played them a total of, what, 20 times almost.
So when they told Dylan Brooks under any circumstances, do you think this is one of the circumstances that they were thinking
of? Oh, they're going to be trying to sign him, bro. This is the reason they'll try to sign him, is they'll be able to try to sign him for 1 year to help the team and then trade him for a very good price. And I don't know if Dylan Brooks is going to want to come back, though, because, I mean, they obviously took sides with Morant in this situation. And I think Dylan Brooks is going to be butt hurt. Bungola hurt.
Bro, for reals. But we ended up getting to see a pretty classic game last night. Joker put up a ridiculous triple-double in the first three quarters. The Lakers made a hell of a run.
I thought they were done, bro. And I was like, whoa, that's crazy.
Weren't able to pull it off, but they made some adjustments late in the game that I think that they're going to be able to lean on as the series goes on. So let's talk about early in the game.
Listen, you're not supposed to win away games. You're just not.
You
in
could
the playoffs.
Tell that they wanted it. They were trying. They intended
but
to steal.
But that's the difference, though. That's the difference, right, though. If the Lakers can sneak one away from Denver, which I think is completely plausible, and going back to LA, you have a legit chance to get up on Denver, like big time. And I don't know if it will happen or not, but it's still something that's cool thinking about.
Right. So if you have, like, a strategy, I'm saying, like, lean on AD one-on-one against Jokic. Don't let Jokic's passing beat you. Don't let those other guys knock down shots.
How do you – this is the issue with Lakers and can't even think of it. Oh, Denver, thank you. Lakers and Denver, right? Mm-hmm. Is Denver goes big on Lakers. All right, they get, what, three forwards, a big guard. You know, they go big. They go really big on the Lakers, and that causes issues. Now, the Lakers are able to adjust to it, but the thing is, though, is that when you have a player that's AD's caliber that's able to score on Joker like nobody's business, right? It's great, but the problem is that Joker is highly effective against a player like AD. And it's cool to see because you got AD with 40 points and then you had Joker with 34 and triple-double. Obviously, and it was a stupid number of like 34, 21, and 14, like stupid mind-boggling numbers. And there's no way you can sit here and say that AD like played him good on defense, man.
Well, I would actually disagree. I'd say he totally played him good. I would say early in the game, here's where
Joker was just taking him to school, bro. He was just like
the Lakers.
He's like, I'm gonna show you how to be the player, an MVP caliber player. I'm gonna show you how to do that.
Right.
You can have 40.
Look, you're right.
But I'm gonna dominate
the
game.
They're gonna have to be able to leave AD on an island with him. And you know, he's gonna have to be able to win that matchup. But that's going to be
he's an old school defender. He's not that old new school of fast, quick, up in your face, you know?
Hachimura, when he was guarding Jokic, right? And then they let AD close in
help.
That was extremely effective. And that's Darvin Ham right there. That, to me, is a elite type of adjustment that I didn't see coming.
Defending adjustment.
Yeah, and I'm like, when I saw the first time I saw it happen, I was like, whoa, that's... Like, I could not have thought of that adjustment. And a lot of times, like, I'm sitting there being like, coaches are, like, a little slow on adjusting. Like the adjustment maybe is obvious. Even, like, Van Gundy or somebody's, like, kind of mentioning what they should do next, and then it happens. This one was not obvious, but it was incredibly effective. And I was like, Darvin Ham might be an elite coach. He's going to have to, like, do more than make one adjustment in one fourth quarter. But finding a way to steal
this series. He flexed the muscles of what he could do.
Yeah. I mean, he's
scary.
It is scary, and his demeanor has improved over his time. Like, I think he had a little bit, like, Jason Kidd on the sideline looks like he's a little bit lost. Like, first bit with Darvin Ham, I think maybe he had a little bit of that. Not sure what to do with my hands right now, Will Ferrell problem. Like, but now he's like, he's a master tactician, and I'm really excited about, honestly, like, learning about the game from watching him make adjustments, because he's really an incredible coach. And it's interesting because the Lakers got him from the Bucks staff, and now the Bucks don't have a coach. And I wonder if Darvin Ham was someone they would have gone with if he was still on the staff or if they would have gone outside. That's something else, but he's a good coach. Damn good coach.
I agree, man. The adjustments that he made were definitely as a veteran coach. You can tell that he spent time with Coach Bud. The discipline that he, you know, demands, you know, obviously he played in the league. So these are just the good things that you need to see as a coach, that he understands what the pressure is in the playoffs and stuff like that. So I don't think the Lakers are done by any stretch of the imagination. I think they're going to be looking really good.
If they had won game one, everybody would be like, oh, shit, they might have just stole the series.
But what do you think? What do you think about Heat Celtics tonight? You think that the Heat do the unthinkable and win game one?
Well, yeah, I mean, I kind of do. I think the Celtics are probably going to come in thinking, hey, we're favored. And Heat will come in being like, we got to punch him in the mouth.
You don't think the 76ers woke him up? I think the 76ers woke them up, kicked them in the nuts, and now the Celtics are going to come out with like this ferocious play.
I don't think – I think they're going to sleepwalk game one. That's what I think.
Cool.
We'll see what happens, but I'm kind of doubting it.
It'll be fun to see.
It will be. I'm excited about these conference finals. The energy's picking up, and the game times are getting more appropriate. So be manageable to catch all the games. That's exciting. But –
it is.
After the commish talked about all the drama, but before the game, we had a little thing called the draft lottery. All right, so let's fast forward to the end of the draft lottery. And when San Antonio gets the number one pick, your first thought was?
Thank God it wasn't the Houston or Portland.
And what about your first thought about? My first thought was, here we go again.
Yeah, but here's the thing about that. Let's just be honest.
Here, I'll take him.
How many players are San Antonio away from being able to compete?
How many players?
I mean, we're talking young players.
How many young players are San Antonio?
Three.
Hi.
You think they're three players away?
I think they're three young players away from being able to compete, and I think they have to develop those players. So I think it's either in this draft they get a couple extra draft picks, or it's next draft that they get a couple extra draft picks, man.
Okay.
You know?
Say hi. Hi. Pound it.
Hi.
Pound it. That's right. We pound it. Oh, he blew you a kiss. You can't really see him. I don't think. But anyway, okay, so tell me. They traded away Derek White. They got a pick. They traded away DeJounte Murray. They got a package.
That's what I'm saying.
They have the assets coming up. It's not – but they're not there,
yes,
you're saying.
But what they need is they need top seven picks.
So they're not a playoff team yet.
No, I think they are. Like, think about this. He's 18 years old. Victor's 18 years old. Mm-hmm. He might be 19, but whatever. I don't think you want, in my opinion, watching how the Thunder dealt with their young players, you know?
Right.
I think it's really kind of indicative of what's going to happen with San Antonio. I think they're going to look at it and be like, okay, now we've got some middle-level players. We've got Victor. We'll take our time with developing him. Make sure we're not rushing him. And next year, we'll take a top seven pick. And that will help us. And then whatever other picks that we can cash in. You know, so when I'm saying that they're still 3-4 years down the road from competing, that's what I meant. If Victor went anywhere else, man, like they would immediately start competing for a championship. There's only one team on my book that was not ready to compete for a championship even with him. And that was San Antonio. And San Antonio just needs time to develop. They got Shohan. They've got
some good role players, bro.
They do, but they need another player besides Victor. It can't
Kelvin
just be
Johnson
Victor and
good.
A bunch of really good role players.
Who else? Josh Primo.
He's gone. Primo's gone, bro. But that's what I'm saying. Is like if they had Primo.
Star.
If they had Primo, right? If they had Primo, I would say that they would be, you know, they maybe could trade up in this draft and get another draft pick in the top 10 and be good.
Yeah.
But they don't have Primo, so they're still two players away. And I think that that's okay. You know, like, seriously, that's okay. That's not a big deal to have two players away and using the draft to get those guys.
So...
Oh, and I want to say this, too, is don't be surprised if Sam Presti tries to move up in the draft this year.
Well, I like the idea of us getting the 11th pick from Orlando, because I think they got 6 and 11. So
yeah,
that would be a really interesting development once again, but that would be a similar thing to that what happened last year. So
they would need not to want that pick, which developing players,
it's tough.
You know, I don't know if they would be, well, I could see a team around like Wizards that don't find the player that they wanted because he got picked before them. That could be like, you know what, we'll trade back what, 5 spots, you know? I could see a pick like that. Do I see the Thunder picking 2 first-round picks this draft? I don't, but it doesn't mean they won't. But I see Sam saying one player, and if I've got to cash in my 2 second-rounders, right, and my first-round pick and a future first-round pick to move up 5 spots, I will.
Because I would love to see like another like J-Dub and Jang. So like the guy.
Yeah, I would love to keep the 12. It makes sense. 11 and 12. Financially, it makes sense for 12. But I do also believe that if there was an opportunity for us to move up for a very slight price, it would be hard for Sam to say no, you know?
Well, it just depends on who he wants. Now, that's a good question. So I've been saying Nick Young, Ray and Rupert. These are two guys that have considered.
Nick Smith, not Nick Young. Nick Smith Jr. Yeah, yeah.
Like, we've been mentioning these guys quite a bit as, like, high on our list.
Yeah, very high. I also like Anthony Black, and if we moved up 5 places, yeah. I feel like it would be a player like Anthony Black.
Yeah, Black isn't probably going to be available at 12. So
no, I mean, like, if he's available at 12, then something happened, yeah. You know? And I that's not something I want.
So when I saw the Spurs get the number 1 pick, I thought, here we go again. Like, David Robinson, Tim Duncan, Wemby. But as, you know, I woke up this morning, I started thinking, like, you know, it was a very different situation when Tim Duncan arrived to when Wemby goes.
Yeah.
Like, the team was already a playoff team. They got Tim Duncan because David Robinson was injured. David Robinson being out for a year put them in a spot where they could get the Twin Towers. And then Duncan's rookie year, they go and win a championship.
And that's what I'm saying, man.
Like,
Victor, same situation could happen with Victor, and it would be okay, you know?
But at the same time, like, he could be in a spot where if he has trouble being healthy, they could be in the lottery for 4 years in a row. Like, this yeah. may not
and,
be.
And that's okay, too, because, like, again, Victor might need 4 years to develop. And I don't mean that in any diss to Victor. I don't mean that any diss to anybody else in the San Antonio developmental aspect, but all we see him playing against is, I would call it Division II, top of Division II schools in America. Maybe low Division I schools, all right? Like, he's playing against competition like that. Yes, it's a little bit more physical, right? But, like, how good would he be playing in the G League this last year? I think he would have been still incredibly effective. It would have been better for him because the more physical contact and more ready to play in the NBA. But when push comes to shove, it's the transfer from, you know, France to America that some people just don't get.
Let me ask you this.
And I think he's going to be fine.
How would he have done in the NBL?
I think it would have been way better for him, for his developmental aspect, to be in the NBL, because I feel like the NBL is better than American college basketball, you know?
Mm-hmm, for sure.
I've been very vocal about that. So with that being said, is that I look at it and saying that the NBL, in my opinion, if you have a top athlete, the NBL is a place that you have to automatically consider number 1, because they're going to help your athlete become a man. And that's something that nobody else really is going to help out. Everybody else is like, you know, like, well, blah, 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 blah. No, the NBL is designed to make men or boys, men out of boys. There we go.
There you go, man.
It does. And every single time I watch the NBL, it's like, damn, that's some hard ass shit going down there. But it's because of that I get excited, because now you're starting to see that type of style in the playoffs right now, man. That physical contact that people are getting away with. And that's the future of the NBA, man. It's getting downhill. It's the open shots are going to go, you know, whoom, shrink very much so with all these massive defenders with long arms. Like, the NBA is changing, and it's starting to morph like into the NBL, and I love it. not, I say morph into the NBL, the style of play, right, guys? They're physical. They get up and down the court quickly. Their plays are all about ball movement, and it's exciting because, in a way, it's a beautiful thing that we've missed since the 90s. Think about it. Shooting, guys, it's all like open shot. Everything is shooting. Right? Ray Allen broke the record for three-point shots and then took his entire fucking career, guys. Entire fucking career, right? And everybody said, no one will ever break that. And what happens? Steph breaks it in what, like 7 years of playing hoops? 8 years of playing hoops?
Like, I think it's like
the game changed so dramatically in that small amount of time that three-pointers became so valuable. And now the NBA is overcorrecting and now making it less valuable while making driving to the hole and getting the foul line awarded more.
So, you know, I was just thinking about for the Spurs, I think they need a player like Josh Giddey, first point guard to really unlock.
Dyson Daniels, yeah.
Yeah.
They need to get an NBL point guard that's bigger and stronger than normal. Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I think it's good for the NBA when the Spurs are relevant. It's been a while since they've been relevant, and nothing makes them more relevant than this. So I'm excited. Now, how do you perceive second round going with us? Do you think we'll end up with a two-way contract out of that, or do you think our two ways are set?
I think our two ways are set. If we do anything with that second round contract, it's think about what we've done do with second round contracts. JRE, mm-hmm. J. Will, Wiggins. I know I'm missing somebody. It doesn't matter. Whoever else it is I'm missing, that's fine. But we give them a $2 million contract. You know?
Yeah.
I think that is always a valuable asset if you can turn that into contracts. So for me, I'm looking at one second-round pick and one first-round pick are coming to the team, or one first-round pick because we traded up.
Okay.
So, again, we're not adding very many players. I would like to see if we add another player through the I want to see a player like Dario. I don't necessarily want to see Dario. I would like to see him play on the team, but if he's going to cost a crazy amount of money, I would rather spend that money someplace else. But I would love to see Dario, a player like Dario, as a center that can bang bodies, that can shoot, that can pass, that will help our big men out. But I don't think that we should address that in the draft. I think that we need to address that because I would like to see a more mature body ready to play and put minutes in the game.
You know, I hope with Dario that we keep him, but even if we don't, I kind of felt the same way with Danilo Gallinari. Like, I hoped we kept him, but it didn't happen. We still were able to get some value out of a sign and trade by helping him land in the right spot and giving him the contract he wanted. So I'm hoping with Dario we find that same situation where we can be a part of helping him go where he wants to go.
And I want us to like talk about a second, like the direction I see the Thunder going with this 12th pick. You know, I don't want to get into the players necessarily right now because, I mean, we're still going through our massive list of players and ranking them. And then from there, we'll go and have a list of players we'll talk about. But I want to talk about the type of player that I feel like Sam Presti is going to look for, because I feel like he's given us an idea of that. Now, I could be wrong with this assumption, but I feel like he wants to go with that shooting guard, point guard, even small forward combination player, a player that can go and, you know, play three different ways and play very effective, like J-Dub, like Josh Giddey. Like, these are the guys that I feel like will be available in this draft. If you did a stretch out and went and got a big man in this draft, I'm totally cool with that. Like, trust me, I'm definitely cool with that. But he's had so much success drafting these guard hybrid players that I wouldn't want him going anywhere else to do. I would just want him to keep on drafting these guys, because if we can even land three or four of these guys that are good picks, which we're going to get three or four of these, I would say 14 through seven picks from other teams because of the trades that we've made, right? So we're going to get a four or five more of these picks. And if he just lands these picks that we have in this like mid-drift of the lottery, bro, this is where it all comes into fruition. So when I'm looking at it, I'm saying guard, hybrid player is what Sam needs to continue. If he decides to go and get a center / forward, I mean, by all means, that's a great idea. But the guard, He's had so much success with it. I feel like he just got to keep doing that. Keep on picking that player. Keep on going for that type of athlete. And I think we'll be fine.
I think it's about a type of person, too. I mean, it's not just like these guys we like to talk about. Luka, Zion,
yeah.
Trey, Ja. Like these elite, you know, superstars, you know, at 20 years old or whatever. Like, it's also like J-Dub and J-Will, right? Like, the player that you see draft day isn't the player that you're going to see at the end of the first year, because their commitment to improvement is really the litmus test of being allowed to join the organization. And when you can expect players to buy into the program, to work their asses off, to show up early, to stay late, to do everything they can. I heard Josh Giddey talking about how a lot of times the Thunder like to keep their rookies in Oklahoma City during the summer for the first year, and that just to help them get ready for the season, learn how to prepare, learn how what it takes to live the NBA lifestyle. And
4 practices, 6 practices a day, you know, 6 days a week. Like, this is what it helps create that professional habits in players' lives.
And you have to be you have to know. You know, we've had some family members of players contact us, and one of them told us that this wasn't a guy that we ended up drafting, although he did play on our team a few years ago, but he said that within a couple days of the draft, Presti went out to dinner with the player and, you know, just try to get to know the player a little bit. And I'm convinced that, like, Presti's interview, you know, style is just, like, get to know people. And if you get to know people, then you can really tell if they'll be the right person for the environment. We've all taken, you know, job interviews where you're trying to answer the question like you think that they want you to answer the question, not necessarily what you would really do in this situation. Where Sam Presti needs to get past that and understand, like, are you going to be the best version of yourself within this program? And if not, that's fine. You can be successful other places. But we need people that are going to add on to the community that's being built and the team that's being built and be team players and contribute. And that's why whenever we pick a player, we don't think, oh shit, we wish we had got our guy. We're like, okay, let's go figure out what Presti and what our team saw in this guy, because we don't assume to know anything.
Sam Presti said it the best, man. I think it was beginning of last year after the draft. He said, it's easy to draft a team, but it's incredibly difficult to, compose a team together that unites. Or it was something along those lines of creating a team that is connected. And I think he's done an incredible job at not just going and drafting these players, but drafting their personalities and recognizing what will go well in the locker room together. You know, and I think that's the key when you're looking at it all, is that Sam Presti wants to keep that locker room a healthy and a place that is safe. You know, like, I think that's a beautiful thing when it comes to a mental aspect of the game, is that you have a GM that's more concerned about the mental positivity of each player than he is to have the best players in that locker room. And it makes all the difference in the long run that these players are coming in. They feel like it's a family atmosphere. And when I say it creates a loyalty aspect to it, it creates a severe loyalty to the point where people don't want to leave, you know?
Mm-hmm. On the way down here, we were listening to some jazz in the car. And it reminded me of, like, what I've heard Coach Daigneault say. And I feel like Presti's, this is a conversation they have a lot. But, you know, when you listen to jazz, it's almost like it's so unscripted, right? And that's how the team wants to play. They want to kind of play with randomness instead of, like, patterns. They don't want to come out with a lot of plays and a lot of sets. They want players to know their role. But when you're listening to really good jazz, you got the drummer who's doing his thing, and you got, you know, the saxophone guy doing his thing, and, you know, the guitar doing his thing, and all, I mean, I don't know, they use guitars, whatever. It's just, it's bouncing all over the place. They're all doing their own patterns, and somehow those patterns work together for something that's, you know, better. But it's not necessarily like they're all doing the same thing or they're all playing a particular part. And when you hear it, you're kind of like, it's a song, But it's not like a song like you would play on the radio. Like, I guess it is the radio, but it's not like a top 50 or top 10, top 20 song or whatever. And if you can have a team where you've got Shay doing his thing, you've got J Will doing his thing, you got J Dub doing his thing, you got Chet doing his thing, you got Giddy doing his thing, and like that's your team, but somehow they're all working together for to be greater than the individual parts, because even though they're playing at their own rhythm, they're learning how to play together. And so many times you see with like two superstars, three superstars, they team up, it's a super team, and then they try to make it work, and they're doing a version of this where everybody's playing your turn, my turn, right? And that's the opposite, right? Can you be each be hitting your rhythm while the other person is hitting their rhythm? That's the question. You know, not can you in isolation hit your rhythm and then the other person, because otherwise you end up with Kawhi Leonard and Paul George. But can we all be hitting our rhythm at the same time, even though it's a little bit different for each player to play their instrument?
You know, I'm watching their practices, the film that I see. And one of the things that I love, absolutely love about the way that the practice goes is that, you know, when I would coach as a team, we'd run over the plays over and over and over and over and over again, mm-hmm. right? As a team. Mm-hmm. What I see in these practices is that individuals are going over the places that they need to be and shooting the ball at those places, driving at those places. It's they're running the offense with nobody else around. And I love it, man. They have these massive gyms so they can do this with 15 players or 13 players or whatever. But I look at it and I'm like, man, that's exactly what you need to do. I mean, that's because you're learning everything with nobody else around. And you're learning how to do this. And then you're learning how to apply it in a real practice, which they don't videotape at that I've seen any video leaks of all the guys playing together, you know? But you know what happens. And you know that these guys are doing the same exact thing that they're supposed to do on their mm-hmm. own. And how many times are you a coach or as a teammate and you got one or two guys that just don't understand the play? They're like, no, you go back door. Well, how many times do you see the Thunder do something like that? Maybe a few times in the course of a 10-game period. Mm-hmm. It's because everybody on their own are working on these plays by themselves. And they're running through it over and over and over again on the exact things that they need to do. Get the ball, catch it, drive to the hole, boom. Catch the ball, shoot it, right? Catch the ball back door. Catch the ball, pass over top. Like, they're doing it all. And it's so impressive because what the coaching staff is having them do is doing this, and they have four practices a day. Come on. Like, these guys, they're learning these habits and their professional habits, and it's a whole new way of thinking. Because how many times did you hear a team in the 90s be like, yeah, we have one practice a day. It would last like an hour and a half. And then Michael or Kobe or whoever – they got there 3 hours early, so they would leave, you know, like, and it's just like, that's cool. But now the new NBA is, this is how you develop the players. It's a regimented, it's in style. Now the Blazers were like, holy shit. Like, everybody else is killing us in developmental aspect. Why? Because they have a G League. They have all this other stuff. So what do? They spent like tens of millions of dollars to get their G League up and going. Like, bro, it's because they recognized what was happening with everybody else. And now I think it's the Suns that are the only team that doesn't have a G League.
Damn.
You know, and
that's
listen,
not gonna be for long as with far the ownership.
As, yeah, and I really like Leonard Miller. I do like him as a body, big man body. But here's the thing though, Kevin, that I struggle with is Sam Presti has had so much success with guards and drafting guards. I can't. The one thing that he struggled with is drafting big men. Let's just be honest. Like, he's got Chet. That was an easy pick for him there, right?
Yeah, that's this. I think his name is BJ Mullins.
Yeah.
What's his name? There's another shit guy that he drafted. Mitch McGarry.
Mitch McGarry.
He drafted that guy from Kansas, Cole Aldrich.
Yep, Cole. Yep.
Yeah, this is not a
I mean, you guy. Might as well say, I mean, I get Nick Collison's like one of those guys, but I mean, Nick Collison was
I
never.
I think he picked Nick Collison. He was there before, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, was
yeah.
he? Okay.
The other guy I'd say is the guy from Baylor. Perry Jones the third, PJ three
and that's what I'm saying is like, you just got to go. You just got to go with what you got, you know. And if he's got this incredible way of picking and developing guards, just go with it.
And
you know?
I mean, like, I love Steven Adams, but like, Giannis was there.
Stop it!
No, you stop it.
I heard KD one time say something about that.
Mm. Yeah,
KD was like, "Well, I mean, I guess the only mistake that I saw Sam make was Adams over Giannis," and everybody starts laughing. It was on a podcast, but I couldn't tell you how long ago it was or anything else like that. So the fact that like KD's giving him shit for that's the only only mistake.
I remember whenever he made the pick, KD put one of those like eyes emojis. So it's like just as soon as he dropped the pick, KD was all over that on Twitter. All right. Well, there we go. Let's say that and we'll just leave it there, bro. Fuck KD. Happy that
if he wants to come play for us for free, then I'm all for
it. I'm happy that he's happy without a coach.
Dude, why don't you do the old school way of playing? Player coach.
Player
baby.
Coach. Hey, how about this? Owner coach. Matt Ishbia comes in to solve the defensive problems.
Dude, that'd be sick, bro.
All right, dude. You going to do this again tomorrow?
Yes. All right. Look for the Michigan State coach to be talked into finally coming to the NBA,
Tom
bro.
Izzo?
Tommy Izzo, bro. There's a couple times he was pretty damn close to do it, but now one of his ex-players is now an owner. I mean, if I'm the ex-player, I'm like, what do you want? 10 million? 15? Tell me when to stop. 16? 17? I'll let you play. I'll let you coach. I owe you.
All right, bro.
Yes, Smitsta. That's what we like to hear, buddy.
There you go, Smith.
45 minutes with Mark and Dave.
Glad you made it home. Kevin, we love you. Frank, what's up, man? Izzo.
Yes.
Enrique.
I love to call him Tommy.
Nick Smith Jr. I say it all the time. I hope I'm right, but it's probably not going to be him.
I mean, listen, I'm all for power forward, center, guard. I just like to see a versatile player that Sam has continued to pick, you know? Yeah. If that forward can play center and can play small forward position, even a guard, shooting guard if we needed to later in his career, then, again, you have to keep on. These are the type of guys that are going to be really valuable as guys that can play multiple positions in the future.
It's beautiful, bro. Can't wait. Spurs are back, guys. Let the games get crazy. Here we go.
Let's get out.
Go.